diary here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told, and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here, we're living now and we're all in this place.
Good afternoon. We're broadcasting this program Monday, June 4th, 2018. It's 12 noon, so you must be listening to the Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour. We're community-based internet radio at enlightenradio.org in Bolivar, West Virginia. I'm Fanny Crawford, your storytelling host. And that was Andy Offutt Irwin performing his original song. Well, it was a recording of Andy Offutt Irwin recording his original song, Tarry Here. And thanks so much to Andy for letting us use that as our introduction almost every week on this program. Our theme today on the Storytelling Hour is hometown stories. Stasz Silkowski will be away for the next week or two. So this week, our special guest this afternoon is...
Larry Hayes.
Welcome back.
In the flesh.
Larry Hayes. Larry was with us a couple years ago, I believe, and we're happy that he's joining us again today. I should have said storyteller Larry Hayes, of course, since that's who we usually have on the show.
Thank you, Fanny. Thank you for that.
I think, are you ready to start with the story, or do you want me to blather on a bit before we do that?
Yeah, I just wanted to blather, just for a moment.
Okay, I'll blather on for. I also have a whole bunch of questions I want to ask you, interesting little tidbits that I've heard now and then from you that I want to follow up on. But I can start by talking about the Speak Story Series in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. This is the sixth series of Adam Booth's Speak Story Series, and Adam is not always there anymore. He's so busy traveling and being a nationally famous storyteller. But you haven't been there much this season, have you, Larry?
No, but I'm looking forward to going next Tuesday.
Yes, that's exactly right. All right, you're ahead of me. Scott Whitehair will be there from Chicago, and Scott's kind of in the urban telling tradition. He's a bit of a younger guy when you're as old as me and Larry. Everybody looks like a young guy. But Scott tells a lot of personal stories and runs an urban storytelling venue, open mic, and story series in Chicago. So I've never heard him before. I'm looking forward to hearing him. That's June 12th, next Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. If you want more information about all of the people I'm going to talk about in the next few minutes, you can go to speakstoryseries.com to find out the details. I guess what you need to know is 7:30. And I think all of these are in the same hall at Reynolds Hall coming up. And then in July 10th, we have Dovey Thomason, who is tells stories in the Native American tradition. And the title of this session she's going to do, this story set, is How the West Was Spun. So she's going to be spotlighting the differences between what we're often taught in school and in the media and what her Native American families, I guess, she's from a number of different traditions, experienced themselves. August 14th, Corinne Stavish will be at Speak telling the story of the Danish resistance and the people in Denmark who got almost every single one of the Jews of Denmark to safety during World War II. And the title of her session is When Good People Do Something, a model for our times. but we'll talk about that another time. September 11th, Donald Davis, the grand old man of storytelling, will be at Speak. Of course, that's another Tuesday, always usually the second Tuesday of the month. And I'm not sure exactly what Donald will be telling. I don't know that he's given us a title for his session, but we all know that it will be an entertaining, educational, heartwarming event, and you definitely want to get your tickets early and show up a bit early on that evening so that you get good seats. October 9th, Linda Gorham will be telling, and I heard Linda Gorham tell this past year at Jonesboro for the first time. She'll be telling some traditional tales, African-American, African, Haitian tales, and I'm very much looking forward to hearing her again. November 13th, Megan Wells. And again, this is another teller that I heard for the first time in Jonesboro this past year, but other people know her very well and tell me that she's a treat not to be missed on the local stage as well as the national stage. And again, if you want more information, you can go to speakstoryseries.com and look up those dates again if you need them and ask your questions via email. And generally, have a good time before you get to come next Tuesday to hear Scott Whitehair. Is that enough blathering on, Larry?
You betcha. Yeah,
okay.
Thank you,
well, do you want to start with your story or do you want me to ask a few questions first?
No, why don't you let me do the story and then you can ask me anything you want.
All right.
And as long as I can take a page out of Kevin Cordy's songbook and answer you with a story.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. He's the master of that, and I'm glad that you're going to do that today. I'll have to let him know that his role modeling
you
has
betcha.
Worked well.
So I grew up in the Halfway, Maryland area. Halfway, Maryland, this is in the 50s now. This is before the Interstate 81 and 70 and all that. Halfway was halfway between Hagerstown, Maryland, and Williamsport, Maryland. There's a little stone along the highway there now that's a little stone that was put there during the trolley days. And in the 20s and 30s, I'm assuming that was a little before my time, but my grandfather was a trolley driver, and he, I guess that's what you call him, a conductor or a driver of a trolley, and he went back and forth between Hagerstown and Williamsport. And later, after they took up the tracks, he was a bus driver. And then he started a little store called Poole's Store in Halfway, Maryland, halfway between Hagerstown and Williamsport. Now, Hagerstown being the larger of the two communities, but Williamsport had its own claim to fame. And if you go there today, you'll notice that the streets in downtown Williamsport, Maryland, are a little wider than they would need to be. And apparently, the story goes that they were on a short list to be possibly considered as to be chosen possibly as the capital of the country. And they made these streets extra wide just in case they were picked as the capital. Of course, another town downstream on the river was ultimately chosen. But that's a whole other story. But the current occupant of the White House is going to fix all that, I understand. But that's a whole other story. But so Williamsport had its own claim to fame. But my free-range friends in the 1950s that lived in Halfway, Maryland, we already knew that Halfway was what we called the capital of the world. It wasn't a real town. We didn't have a town hall. We had a fire hall. And one of the things that us kids would do would be on Sunday, on a summer morning, we'd go down to the fire hall and hang out and wait till hopefully the firemen would have to go out on a call. And we would get on our bikes and we would follow the fire truck to the fire. And that was about as exciting as it gets in halfway Maryland in the 1950s. So we didn't have a town hall. We had a fire hall. And we had an old school called Lincoln School, which is obviously on Lincoln Avenue, which is where the blinker light was. It wasn't even a red light then. It was a blinking light. But the old school was two-story brick old building with the kitchen in the basement and the cafeteria in the basement. And long about just before lunch, this is in the days when they would they actually cooked food in the kitchens in the schools, and I had an old aunt that was the cook down in the kitchen. And she and we could smell on Fridays, of course, it was always fish sticks or some other kind of fish because it was Friday, you know, and that's what you ate on Fridays. Back in the day, we had always had fish sticks or something like that. And on Thursdays, it seemed like it was always macaroni and cheese and stewed tomatoes, and we would mix the stewed tomatoes in with the mac and cheese, and we would have a good old time at that. But across the street from the old school, my grandfather quit the job on the bus, and he started a little store. And the reason that people came to the store mainly was because he had a little post office in there, and nobody wanted to go all the way to Hagerstown or Williamsport to go to the post office, so it was very popular to go to Pool Store to get your stamps and to mail your packages and so forth. So when you went inside, you would look back in the back right-hand corner, there was a little post office. And right beside the post office was a big oak glass front cabinet or case, which was the penny candy case. Of course, they must have had 100 different kinds of penny candy in that case. And then around the corner was my grandma's ice cream freezer, and she had big tubs of Hershey's ice cream. Now, before Ben and Jerry got together, Hershey's was the most popular type of ice cream. And for a nickel, you could get yourself an ice cream cone. Now, my mama wouldn't let us mooch at the store. So when she had one, she would send us down after supper with a nickel to the store, and my grandmother would let us dip our own ice cream. And we would sit there on these little stools and go round and round on this little swivel stool and eat our ice cream, but we'd only eat about half of it. And then we'd go back for another dip of another flavor, and if we weren't careful, we could get pretty sick on that nickel. But of course, for a nickel, you could also get yourself a Coke or a candy bar. And of course, for a nickel, you get a stamped, you know, to mail your letter, and you have 2 pennies left over to get your, you know, to get your pennies at the, to spend your pennies at the store as well, for penny candy. And then in the backyard of the store, there was a big old cherry tree. About this time of year, school would let out, and the white sweet cherries would come ripe, and we would climb up in that cherry tree when we would eat those cherries. And also at this time of year, the carnival would come around about the week after school was out. And the carnies would come in their big trucks, and we'd go over on a Sunday afternoon and watch them set up the rides for the carnival starting on Monday evening. And at the bottom of the biggest truck was always the last thing they would put up, which would be the Ferris wheel. Now, when I was a little kid, I would watch them put up that Ferris wheel, and I'd look in the back of that truck, and they always had parts that weren't put on the Ferris wheel, and you couldn't get me on that Ferris wheel for the longest time, because I was convinced that those carnies were sleep-deprived, and they forgot to put the most important parts on the Ferris wheel. I didn't realize that there were probably extra parts, and they really didn't need them unless something actually did break. So the carnival was a big deal. And so my grandparents on my other side, the Hayes side of the family. They lived in the neighborhood as well. Now, my grandfather, his nickname must have been Lefty because he was missing an arm. During the war or just before the war, he was working at the Fairchild factory, helping them make to make the flying boxcar for World War II, and he somehow got his arms caught in a big old metal stamping machine, and he lost one arm, and he almost lost the other one. And in those days, people that were disabled weren't working. They were all of a sudden they were retired, and my grandfather was retired by the time I really knew him, and he always had one arm. He always wore long sleeve shirts. I guess he did. He was a little shy about showing that stub on his right shoulder. So he would put the sleeve he didn't need in his front pocket. And in his other front pocket was some big old smelly cigars that he would smoke. Now his wife, my grandmother, didn't let him smoke in the house, so during the good weather he could go outside, but during the cold, bitter cold months of the winter, she would let him go down in the basement to smoke his cigars. And down in the basement he had lots of time on his hands, and there was somebody had given him a couple years before that some woodworking tools that they didn't need. They were surplus, and they were just sitting in the corner. And he finished his rehab, and they wanted him to keep using his good hand. And so in the next decade or so, he actually taught himself how to use all those tools. And in time, he made every stick of furniture in his house, including a big old four-poster walnut bed that was in their bedroom, and I was so impressed. Of course, he used a vice a lot, as you might imagine. But he also finished his furniture with a hand rubbed finish. He never used varnish or polyurethane. He always used some mixture of linseed oil and some kind of magical stuff to make his finishes. About the time that was going on, the cherry tree in the backyard of the store died, and my grandfather Hayes, he convinced someone to cut it up into boards, and he made a lot of his furniture out of walnut and cherry. In fact, when my wife and I got married in the late 60s, he made a cherry table for us as a wedding gift. And it sits in our home, of course, today, over a half a century later. And every time I can go in that room and I can lay my hand on that hand-finished surface of that cherry table, and I can close my eyes, and in my mind's eye, I can see my friends and I out on that cherry tree picking those cherries about this time of year and eating them until we don't want to eat them anymore. And we can look, I can see across that ridge of that store building and in the back of the old Lincoln School, and halfway I can see just the very top of that Ferris wheel. And I can hear the caller in the bingo tent. And I can smell the cotton candy, and I can hear that old trolley coming down the track and stopping at that little stone, and halfway between Hagerstown and Williamsport and halfway Maryland, the capital of the world.
Thank you, Larry. Whoa, you have really evoked
What? That, did you say I couldn't hear you? I didn't have my headphones on.
You've really evoked that period of time and that story.
Whether something I forgot to tell you,
go ahead.
If you don't mind.
Yeah, please.
On the day, in the morning after when the carnival was there in the morning, we would go over and the carnies would still be sleeping. We'd go over and sneak in there and we would get the pennies from the bottom of the penny pitch. You know, they would fall at night, the night before, they would fall in the dust and the dirt under the platform. And we'd take those, we'd fill our pockets with pennies and go back over to the store and get in line at the candy, the candy counter. And so, yeah, that was amazing.
Wow. I love that story. I do have a couple bones to pick with you, though. But let me do a station ID first. You're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. I'm your storytelling host, Fanny Crawford. We're going to be missing Stash Zilkowski for a week or two. And instead, we have here with us...
Larry Hayes.
Thank you, Larry. And Larry just told us a wonderful story on our theme of hometown stories. A lovely story about Halfway, Maryland in the 50s and growing up there. And some of our experiences are parallel. Mm-hmm. I definitely have such fond memories of macaroni and cheese with stewed tomatoes. Oh my gosh. I went home, our school shut down at lunchtime and everybody had to go home or somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, the old waitress saying, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here when the restaurant closes. Well, this is backwards. When the school closes, you have to go somewhere else to eat. And I, because both my parents worked outside of our house, I went to my best friend Paula Greenberg's house for lunch every day and after school every day. And part of my growing up was watching television for that half an hour. It Could Be You, the game show that was on in Philadelphia. I don't know where it was, all over the country. But
it's a new one for me. I don't know that one.
It was a show about where they would bring in three contestants to answer questions and be on this ordinary game show. But at some point towards the end of the show, they would bring out some long-lost relative of one of the contestants who always looked completely thrown for a loop and astonished that this person had shown up that they hadn't seen for 25 or 40 years. And I always thought it was a bit odd that you could go on that program as a contestant and not have it occur to you that somebody you knew might show up from your past, since it happened every single day on the program.
That was the premise of the show.
Yeah. But macaroni and cheese. Well, I never had macaroni and cheese there. We had bologna sandwiches and baked beans and hot dogs and things like that and donuts. I ate more desserts and sugar in that house than I have probably eaten my entire life outside of that house, which is why I loved to go there. But you also mentioned Hershey's ice cream as the most popular ice cream before Ben and Jerry's. And in Philadelphia, Breyers was the brand. Even at the Philadelphia Zoo, there was a big sign for Breyers and Breyers ice cream. So I do like Hershey's ice cream, and I eat Hershey's occasionally, but Breyers
will.
Well,
they still have it.
They do.
Occasionally.
Mm-hmm. But Breyers will always be my favorite.
Oh, that's good, too, of course.
Okay, well.
So is that the bone that you had to pick with me, girl?
That was the big one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are some... Okay. There's some other ones. I love your story about the carnival. Philadelphia had a county fair, but I didn't really know about that or go to it until I was in my late 20s. It wasn't until my daughter was born and was interested in carnivals that I even noticed that there was a Philadelphia county fair. But up in Jamestown, New York, where we visited my dad's family every summer, there was... there were a couple festivals, a couple fairs, and
the Chautauqua County Fair is where Jamestown is, and the Cattaraugus County Fair is where Olean, New York is, and that's where I first rode Ferris wheels, and that will always be my favorite ride. I don't like speed. I like height.
Oh, you like height?
Yeah, I do love the Ferris wheel.
Do you do roller coasters, Frank?
Only if tortured. If there's a four-year-old who absolutely has to go on the roller coaster and no one, and it's a small roller coaster and nobody else will go, I will go up, but I don't really enjoy it at all.
No, that's not my deal either.
I don't like being jerked around and smashed into the rails, and it just doesn't seem like a lot of fun to me. And you don't even get to enjoy the height while you're up there because you're busy falling. And hitting your head on iron bars. Thank you for sharing that story.
You're welcome. It's the first time I've ever told that story. So I mean, in that version.
Mm-hmm. Except to family members, probably. No.
Very first time.
Oh, well, you're going to have to share the podcast then with your kids and your granddaughter. Mm-hmm. And by the way, listeners, if you came in late and you want to hear a story that you've missed, or if you want to catch up on past shows of the Enlightened Storytelling Hour, you should go to our podcasts at talltales.enlightenradio.org. Do you need a pen, Larry? No, you were just telling me that you listened to last week's show.
I did find the website. Okay. I listened to last week's show.
Did you listen to it at 12 o'clock, or did you go back and listen to the podcast?
No, I didn't listen to it at 12 o'clock.
Yeah, I often advise people not to listen at 12 o'clock because you never know what's going to happen at 12 o'clock. And it often takes us an edit to make the show make sense. So, that's why I say talltales.enlightenradio.org over and over again, so people will go to the podcasts rather than the live version.
But Fanny, I have a question for you.
Just one?
Well, it's been in my mind for a long time. I wanted to ask you, how do you know that anybody is actually listening to the station?
People ask me that all the time. Well, we know because there is a counter. John Case, who's our station manager, has a little secret cheater that you can pull up. I cannot pull it up, but John can. Mm-hmm. And tell us not only how many listeners we have at any given moment in time, but how many different listeners we have over the course of the hour. And he can actually do that for any hour that we're broadcasting, not just for the Enlightened Storytelling Hour. So that's actually an excellent question. And I do know that we have listeners from all over the country.
Really?
Because we're an internet station. I know we have a devoted set of listeners in Minneapolis.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Minnesota.
Yeah. That's a little shocking, isn't it? I think probably most of our listeners come from the Shepherdstown, West Virginia, Panhandle, Maryland,
maybe
Pennsylvania area. And now that you're on the air with us for the second time, we should have a Pennsylvania, a burgeoning Pennsylvania contingent. So in answer to your question, I don't know if you wanted to know how many, okay, then we won't go there. But I do know that, and we do have some listeners who have, I don't know if they live in South Africa or if they were just in South Africa when they were listening, but we do have listeners who have told us that they were listening in South Africa.
So you got feedback from someone.
Mm-hmm. And now that I have family members in New Zealand, I'm expecting that any minute we'll have. But, you know, one of the things that keeps coming up is that people want to call in. And we do have that capacity.
Really?
So we need to, we have done that in the past.
Interesting.
But it also means that we wouldn't so easily be able to edit because we would be taking calls.
Sure, and there's always a risk.
There's
always a risk that...
We have had the occasional glitch when we've had storytellers calling in.
Really? Interesting.
The phones don't always work the way they're supposed to. We usually manage to get them to work, but it sometimes takes a bit.
Okay. Very good.
Well, but that is something.
Thank you for answering that question.
Well, Stasha and I have talked about using the phones more, and so we're working towards that. But that was a good question. Let's see. I'm going back to my cheat sheet to see what we had said we were going to do. We don't always do exactly what we say we're going to do, but I guess one thing that I would like to do right now is to talk about Stories in the Round.
Yeah.
And I know you are a big fan of stories, one of our most devoted story fans. And of course, if this is your first time, that's about the only way you would not have heard of Stories in the Round if you've been listening in the past. That's the storytelling venue that I coordinate in Hagerstown. And we run 10 months out of the year, March through December. Generally, the fourth Monday of the month. Sometimes we have to move the schedule around a bit if a teller is not available, and that's the only month we can get them, then we might go to a different Monday. But so we are not even halfway through our season yet. And we just had Kevin Cordy come last month in May. And in June, I'm very happy to say that Andy Offit Irwin will be here on the 18th of June. And Larry, are you going to be out of town by then?
Yeah, I'll be leaving in about a week.
Oh.
So I'm going to miss Andy.
Again?
Well, yes, I didn't see. Well, I've seen him multiple times, but I've heard him tell multiple times, but never at Stories in the Round in Hagerstown, Maryland.
Which is always, of course, a very special telling when Andy's with us. So he will be here on June 18th, and that'll be 7 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown. And if you don't know Hagerstown very well, that's 13245 Searfoss Pike, Cearfoss, if you want to enter that in your GPS system. If you want more information, either about Andy's performance or any performance about Stories in the Round, you can call me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638. You could also email me at Fanitsky, Fanitsky, at hotmail.com. And I can tell you more information, such as $10 in advance, if you order your tickets in advance, or you can pay at the door for $12. And we certainly hope you will be there for Andy. Again, you want to come early and book your tickets as early as possible. We did have a few seats remaining when Andy was here last summer, but not very many. So we're hoping he will be even more popular this time. And last time Andy was with us, he did a story called Sister True. That's about what it was like for him growing up in Georgia in the 60s, and the various minority communities that he participated in and was part of, and his school friends and the beloved people that he knew in his town. And this time when he comes, he's promised to do a follow-up story to Sister True. So if you heard Andy last year, you want to come again. And if you've never heard Andy tell, you certainly want to be there. In July is the month that comes after June.
And
I'll just tell you about who's coming then. That would be Magid Melvin Medeletz. Magid means rabbi, means a storytelling rabbi. And Melvin Medeletz tells stories in the rabbinical Judaic tradition. And I've known Melvin Medeletz most of my life. I cannot remember a time when I did not know Magid Medeletz. But in my childhood, he was not a Magid. He was an elementary school teacher. He taught sixth grade at my public school, Leidy School in Philadelphia. And I spent most of my school career up until sixth grade sure that I was going to have my beloved Melvin Medalitz as my sixth grade teacher. Unbeknownst to me, I ended up with Mr. Joseph Sweeney as my sixth grade teacher, and I was quite distressed at the time, but I soon learned that Mr. Medalitz and Mr. Sweeney were good friends, and I did see Mr. Medalitz sometimes at my house because he was also friends with my parents, and the better I got to know him, the better I got to love him, and it was quite wonderful to reconnect with him at a funeral, a memorial service for a mutual friend back in March, I believe it was, and I invited him to come as soon as I heard that he was now a Magid and telling sacred stories. I invited him to come to Stories in the Round. So he will be with us on July 23rd at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown, again at 7 p.m. And you can get more information by calling me at 301-730-1638. Don't call while we're on the air, however. wait a bit till this afternoon. Or you can email me at any time because I'm not going to look at my email while we're broadcasting. So, did I say $10 in advance and $12 at the door? I did say that.
Yes, you did.
Okay, well, it's probably time for me to say that you are listening to the Enlightened Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. And today is Monday, June 4th. We have with us a special guest,
Larry Hayes.
Storyteller Larry Hayes, who's he doesn't maybe know yet, but he's going to be interviewed. He knows he's telling stories, but he's, he probably does know because I told him some of the questions I might ask before we started.
As long as I can answer the question with a story.
Okay, all right. That sounds good to me. Yeah. Do you, so I should ask a question then.
You should.
So that you could tell another story. Were there any of those questions that I shared with you earlier that were your special favorites?
You were going to ask me about some of my travels.
Sure. Okay.
And some of my...
I do know that you have been traveling a fair bit in the last few years, and I know that you just recently got back from Ireland, and once I got over my envy, accepted the fact that I was not going to Ireland this year, I realized you must have come home with some vivid memories.
Well, let me tell you a story.
Please do.
I went with a friend of mine, a storyteller, whose name is Marion Joyce. She's a regional storyteller in the Lancaster area, and she is from Ireland. And she grew up in Ireland, and she's been in this country for 20 years, I guess. And every year she organizes a group, mostly from people around Lancaster, people she knows. She hires a driver, and she gets 8 to 10 folks that want to visit her old stomping grounds on the east and the southern coast of Ireland. I'm sorry, the western coast of Ireland and southern coast. And so I met her at the Lidditz Storytelling Festival about 5 or 6 years ago. And we finally got sort of on the short list, and we were invited and to go along. And so we met, there was folks from the Franklin Marshall College and some retired folks from that area. And we just had a wonderful time, and the guide was amazing. So she has this little side business where she goes once a year, and she sponsors this little trip. So if you're interested in a custom, and she also customizes the trip to the needs or the wishes of the participants. So we had a lot of teachers and storytellers on the trip. So she geared it to that, but it was wonderful. That's my story about Ireland.
So did you did she take you on a tour of her family, stomping grounds, you said?
Yeah, we met some of her family and we some of her friends, and we got to go to some places that the regular tour buses don't go. We had a small little bus, and it was great.
So a lot of taverns?
Oh, a lot of good pubs. A lot of good pubs. And, of course, one of the things they did some years ago is they banned smoking in their pubs in the whole country. And the other surprising thing that I learned was in the pubs, the menus include vegetarians. And, of course, not necessarily in this country. But surprising, since I'm a plant-based Whole Foods vegetarian, if you will, I was surprised at the good choices of food there.
Very good. I would not have known that if you hadn't shared.
That's true. You see there? It's a good thing we got together this morning.
So two very good reasons to go to Ireland, besides the traditional ones. No smoking in pubs. And vegan and vegetarian foods. Excellent. Not to mention the beer.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that. What's that black beer they have over
Guinness?
There? Guinness. I'm not a big fan of that, but they have other choices.
Tasty
too.
Things.
You bet.
Very good. Okay, well, that was one of my main questions, was to get you to talk about your trip to Ireland, and I bet you met some interesting people along the way. Some of Marion Joyce's family and friends, you said, but also some people from Franklin and Marshall. You probably got to know them pretty well.
And we are going to, not to plug the Lititz Festival again, but we're going to have a...
We should plug the Lititz Festival.
It's going to be the last weekend in September. And we're going to have a little reunion with the people on the trip at that time. And we're going to visit a little pub in the Lancaster area as well.
Very good. So it's the last weekend in September. Mm-hmm. And do you know the website where people can get more information?
If you Google Lititz Storytelling Festival, I'm sure they have the information up there.
Okay.
It's a great medium-sized festival, not too small, not too big.
Mm-hmm. And I think I've been there twice.
Mm-hmm.
Is that? Do you remember me being?
I think I was there twice.
Yeah. And really enjoyed it. And they have, my gosh, top-notch tellers from all over the country. Mm-hmm. That was the first amazing thing to me, was that a tiny little town like Lititz could. Of course, Jonesboro was a tiny little town.
Well, what's amazing to me too is some tellers that were in the audience, just because they wanted to hear some of the people that were there. Like we ran into Ed Stavender there.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Well, I didn't know you were on the program." He said, "I'm not. I just came here to listen to Donald Davis or somebody like that."
I think Donald's there again this year.
I think he is.
Wow, very good. And is Andy there this year? Andy was there last year.
I don't recall. I didn't look at the whole list.
I need to go to the website and find out who's going
to
be there. We should be announcing these festivals regularly. So I know that you took this wonderful tour of Ireland, but I also know that you were recently in Colombia.
Mm-hmm, the country of Colombia.
Yes. So you had a sort of non-traditional way of getting around the country.
Yeah, it was a bike tour. My son, who built me a custom-made bicycle 11 years ago after I had a cardiac arrest, he and I have gone some trips, and he's traveled all over the world with his bicycle, but when he can't get a younger person to go with him, sometimes he calls me up and says, "Hey, Dad, you want to go? would you like to go to Spain and Portugal?" And, "Sure, I'll be there." And this time I had a friend in Colombia who was asked me to come, you know, see his finca. You know, the finca is a small farm in Colombia. And I said, well, I don't. Yeah, I've heard about some of the problems in the country. And he said, don't worry. You know, it's very safe now. They've made peace with most of the FARCA, which was the civil war
the rebels
thing, rebels, and I think they're pretty well. The folks there are really pleased to be over that part of their history, and they're. But it's a beautiful mountainous country, and.
I remember you telling me a bit about your first day.
Yeah, the first day took about 10 hours to get from the airport to the town. Town of 3 million people. And in this country, you know, on the outskirts of town is where the more affluent people live. But in that country and a lot of South American countries, the edge of town is where the poor people live. And so we got to the big city of Medellin just in time for rush hour. After about an 8-hour ride across the mountainside to get to town. And that was an experience I'll never forget.
And of course, you never considered taking public transportation. You were going to ride your bikes the entire way.
Well, we knew they had a bus system between the small towns in the country. And we were thinking about possibly going on that bus system. And we ended up with some pretty interesting rides because some of the roads were paved and some were not paved. Mm. And since we had road bikes instead of mountain bikes, well, sometimes we had to give up and ride on the bus.
So one of my follow-up questions then would be, if you're looking at your travel experiences strictly through the lens of storytelling, is it better to be moving on two wheels or better to be in an automobile?
Oh, it's always better to be moving as slow as possible on foot or by two wheels.
Yeah. Is that your general philosophy of life, or is that only about travel?
Oh, you bet.
that's a good one. So the teller in you says two wheels are always better than three. Of course, there probably was not a lot of rain in Colombia.
No, it was in February, and it was beautiful.
Very nice.
In the 70s and 80s.
I can feel myself turning green again with a Colombian envy, not Irish envy. Okay, so now that you've been an international traveler for a while, do you have a must-see or list of must-see destinations?
I have one more bike trip I want to do. I wanted to do it for my 70th birthday, but that's already gone. I wanted to go across the country on my bicycle, and my son said, "Dad, you know how boring it is in Kansas." And so
there are parts of Kansas that have a few hills.
Yeah. But anyway, but now my current thought and my current plan is to go from his house in Portland, Oregon to my another son's house in Denver. And that's the most picturesque part of the western part of the country, down through the Tetons and Yellowstone and all that. So that's going to hopefully be early next summer. I can't do it in spring or fall because of the possibility of snowfall and such. So I almost have to do it in the summer.
But what about Vermont?
Well, I'm going to have to make some adjustments to my schedule in Vermont.
I'm shocked.
I'm going to have to only work a half a season next year if they'll have me.
Well, I'm sure they'll have you.
We'll see.
Well, I love this idea of this long distance trips. Doesn't have to be coast to coast, but long distance trips across the U.S. And of course, my family reunion is in upstate New York every summer in August. And I've, the last 10 years, I guess, I've been trying to figure out how to take a bike trip up there instead of going by car. So it's a 6-hour trip from my house to Olean, New York, which is where some of my dad's family still lives, and that's where he spent a good deal of his childhood. It would not be an easy ride It would be through mountains, through several sets of mountains, through the Appalachians. And I'm really intrigued by this. Mm. And at one point, I had even mapped out a route. And then some people who are much more avid bikers than I am, who bike regularly, told me I was out of my mind to try that trip. But I haven't given up on the idea.
Hmm.
If you have any interest in going to Western New York, Larry, you should let me know if you, well, you feel about
we'll
a bike
sometime.
Ride. Yeah. Okay. Would you be willing to do a station identification for us?
Sure, if I put my glasses on and you show me where the paper is.
I'm sure you could probably wing it on your own, but there is...
Well, this is Fanny Crawford is, Radio. This is... Wow, this is Larry Hayes, your featured storyteller today on the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour. EnlightenedRadio.org in Bolivar, West Bygarsh, Virginia. And hosted by Fanny Crawford.
That's me.
That's you, girl.
Well, now we have your voice for posterity. And anytime we need a station identification, we can use Larry Hayes. We just won't tell them what day it is if we do that. Do you have any questions for me? You did have one question for me that was a surprise. But while I'm pondering what other questions I might have for you, you can think about that.
Well, the only question I have is, could you tell us a story, Fanny?
Oh.
Doesn't have to be a long story.
Well, it will not be a long story because we don't have that much. Well, we have about 15 minutes, not quite 15 minutes left. I had thought about telling a story when we came up with that theme, hometown stories. I did think about what story I might tell. And I decided that... if I think about my hometown of Philadelphia, the part of Philadelphia that is really feels like home to me is Fairmount Park, which of course is this huge park that spreads all through Philadelphia. It used to be even bigger than it is now. It's been a bit divided now into several sections, and not all of them are actually called Fairmount Park. But I do remember my very first birthday party in Fairmount Park, pretty close to our house in West Philadelphia. And there are black and white photographs of me. Did I just say I don't remember or I do? I do not remember my first birthday party in Fairmount Park. But there are black and white photos of me to remind me about it. And there I am sitting on the grass eating an enormous piece of birthday cake. I'm the youngest child in the group, and I'm sitting down in some of the photos. I'm standing up, but in every single one of these pictures, I have a shell-shocked expression on my face, as if I'm not quite sure what I'm doing there and who all these other people are, although I certainly knew some of them pretty well. There's a herd of other smiling kids. I am not smiling in any of the photographs, but all these other smiling kids who were ranged. I'm the youngest one there, but there were other kids as young as 18 months or year and a half, up to 8 or 9 years old. There are no grown-ups that you can see in these photos, though I'm guessing my parents and many of the other parents of the other kids must have been there. It's the summer in Fairmount Park, 1951, and who among those proud parents would waste film on grown-ups? So that's kind of my explanation for why there's no big people in the photos. Later on, I do remember my dad taking me to the park and lifting me up to climb on the statues and monuments of Fairmount Park a few years later and explaining everyone. Both of my parents were quite good at explaining why this monument was in the park. My favorites and the ones I remember most vividly and earliest were the gigantic blackened bronze lions. I only learned as an adult they were called the Florentine lions. They were on 4 feet high, maybe 6 feet square pedestals of concrete. But the lions themselves were 4 or 5 times as big as me. They were set up in the park following the 1876 sesquicentennial in Philadelphia, which was sort of a precursor to a World's Fair type of event. But this one was meant to commemorate the birth of our nation. I remember exploring the statue of General Meade. My dad talked a bit about that Civil War general in one of the places behind Memorial Hall where we used to picnic a lot. There were great green bronze winged horses, and then with them standing goddesses with these huge broad shoulders and their striding legs that were big around as my head, perched up high. What I could mostly see from the ground were their feet, these 18-inch bronze feet encased in bronze sandals. But their heads were a full 15 feet above me from their perch high on the steps of Memorial Hall. And that was directly across the street from where we lived by that time on Parkside Avenue. Memorial Hall was the central hall of the sesquicentennial buildings with its huge glass dome and a bronze of the female icon for victory, the ancient Greek version of victory, standing on the very top of that dome. She was holding a bronze wreath, but my little brother Dougie called her the lady with the Cheerio, that being his favorite food, and she was apparently to us down on the ground holding a Cheerio. And even now, even my brother Doug's adult children, my nieces, call that statue that whenever they see her. That's the lady with the Cheerio. So I learned to play hopscotch and hide and seek with the neighborhood kids in front of our house on the south side of Parkside Avenue, the wide four-lane boulevard that at one time was seamed at the far end with trolley tracks. Larry Talk spoke about trolleys in her story, so that's something we have in common too. And those trolley tracks, that wide street of Parkside Avenue, separated us from Fairmount Park and all that was wild and green and pastoral in West Philadelphia. Most of those kids that I played with on the street went to Leidy School, my elementary school, just 5 or 6 blocks from my house, so I knew them all pretty well. But then a few years later, I learned stoop tag and double dutch from kids who lived on our block but went to a different school, Our Lady of Sorrows Catholic School, a full 20 blocks away from our house. But I also spent time in Fairmount Park with those kids. The Fairmount Park was notable to the other kids on the block primarily because most of us were not allowed to go there on our own. My parents were unusual in that they allowed both me and my little brother to cross the big street of Parkside Avenue if we asked first to play in the park. And maybe more unusual, on the weekends, they would sometimes go on walks with us through the park or drive our old green Pontiac. I guess later on we had a pink and white used Chevrolet, but mostly we had Chrysler products. And in the car would be a Coleman ice chest full of food and boxes filled with accessories and more food to one of our favorite family park sites for picnics, either Belmont Plateau or the West River Drive or behind Memorial Hall. Whenever we had out-of-town guests or visits from friends who lived on the other side of the city, my mother would organize a visit to the Japanese house, which was an authentic reproduction of a period Japanese house from the 50s. And I think it was actually a gift from Japan after World War II to the city of Philadelphia. Other cities got cherry blossoms, and we got a few cherry trees in Philadelphia, but the Japanese house was what we were most famous for, and I did love to go there. We had a family from the Soviet Union who stayed with us for about a week as part of my parents' Soviet-U.S. build the friendship between the Soviet Union and the United States. And this family with two kids, a boy my age and a baby who was a little younger than my brother. I was probably 7 at the time. And we spent a lot of time in Fairmount Park with that family. And I have my most vivid memory of that visit is standing by the monuments in Fairmount Park and sticking out my chest, thumping my chest and saying, "I'm Dwight D. Eisenhower." I have no idea where that came from because Dwight D. Eisenhower was not a particular hero of my family, although I did know he had been a pretty good general in World War II. But it was kind of out of character for me. I think that I was just tired of talking about the Soviet Union by that time. But this other child, this boy my age, immediately jumped up on top of the monument that we were standing near, puffed out his chest, thumped his chest, and said, "I am Nikita Khrushchev!" And all the adults were looking at each other in astonishment and laughing their heads off because it was not in character with the purpose of this visit at all. But that is one of my fond memories of Fairmount Park. And we went on to have many wonderful celebrations and memories of Fairmount Park. I remember visiting Echo Hall near Memorial Hall with my brother and our respective partners at that phase of our lives. We were both, had not been married all that long. And I remember Dougie, he was Doug by then, not Dougie any longer, but rushing to to grab the corners at each end of that low concrete bench at Echo Hall and whispering into the corner of the stone bench where the curved wall at the back of that enclosure met the pillar and the lamppost at the end, because we wanted to demonstrate for our tourist spouses how the person at the other end could hear so clearly family secrets, conjugal secrets, or any other kind of secrets echoing in that opposite corner. And somehow our partners never found this discovery quite as thrilling as, or any visiting out-of-towners never found it quite as thrilling as we did. I remember going to the zoo, which is in Fairmount Park, taking my nieces and my daughter to the zoo. We have photos of the kids standing on top of the bronze baby hippo, just like we did as kids, and spending a whole lot of money on ice cream and Cracker Jacks, peacock feathers, and animal puzzles at, you know, for outrageous prices at the zoo store, but also the kids becoming intimate with tortoises, the giant land tortoises in their enclosure while a benevolent keeper stood by, providing helpful commentary and instructions on the emotional secrets of tortoises to get them to stand still and be petted. When my dad was well into dementia and Parkinson's, we went one Christmas week to Philadelphia Zoo, pushing him in his wheelchair to the reindeer corral to have our official zoo photograph taken with three reindeer and Santa's sled. And that was kind of a bittersweet moment. My dad's probably the only one in that picture enjoying himself. The rest of us were kind of teary-eyed and, if not downright cranky, pondering past Christmases and trips to the zoo. And I could go on and on and on with my hometown of Fairmount Park. But we're running out of time. So, do you have any last words or a little story that you'd like to end with for our listeners to take away with them from today's Enlightened Radio Story Hour?
Well, how much time are you talking about, Fanny?
Well, two, three minutes. Mm. You don't have to talk at all. If you're done, that's fine, too. But I wanted to give you that opportunity.
No, I think I would I'm thinking about maybe coming back next week if I'm invited.
Ah.
Because originally I was going to come.
Right, we switched weeks on
the 11th.
I think we could do that.
And I'm not going to Vermont till the 13th, so maybe I can save the other longer story for that.
That's a great, those are great last words. I'm happy to hear that.
Okay. So stay tuned, listeners.
All right. That sounds good. So next week on June 11th, we'll look forward to hearing more stories from Larry Hayes and maybe some add-ons to some of the stories that he told today. Thank you, Larry, for joining us and filling in for Stash Silkowski today. I don't think Stash will be back next week, but maybe the week after. So we have you to look forward to. This program is much more fun when there are two storytellers on air. Okay, this is Fanny Crawford and
Larry Hayes
closing today's noontime broadcast of the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, independent community radio from Bolivar, West Virginia. Tune in next Monday at 12 noon for more storytelling. The Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional storytellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned right now for Rock and Roll Poetry from John Case.